What's up, everybody? Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks from Move the Sticks. Bucky, for those that haven't listened to our show, tell them what it's about.
Two former NFL scouts, about 20 years of experience looking at the game from a different perspective, really digging into the personnel evaluations and also some of the team matchups.
Also going to be focusing on the draft as it gets closer. And you can check out our show on NFL.com/podcast. You can find it on iTunes as well as YouTube on the NFL channel. Just pump in Move the Sticks.
The Around the NFL Podcast won a Stitcher Award, I think. Where the hell is that thing?
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes. Colleen Wolf.
Whoa.
Chris Wessling. And Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys and girl?
Hey, Dan.
It's weird when you say, and girl, and then Wes immediately responds, hey, Dan.
Yeah, what are you, a girl, Wes? Nailed it.
I don't know.
Ooh.
You don't know.
You don't know. Let's talk about it.
Let's dive
You're not
in.
Sure?
I'm fine.
Whatever you
I'm
are.
I'm thrown off by this whole, I don't know.
Whatever you are, we love you, Wes.
Why did it go there?
I don't know. Colleen is a girl, a woman, actually. What's
yeah.
up?
Hey, how's it going? How are you?
That old,
are you under the
I'm
weather?
I'm okay. I'm not feeling
worried
great.
About you.
Got the Las Vegas flu.
Oh.
You know.
I think I got sick in Vegas.
Was it basically. Because of Spice Rack?
Spice Rack. Yeah. First of all, Spice Rack, Chris Wessling's desert consigliere, was an incredible host.
Really?
Yes. We got to know Spicy a little bit, and he took care of all the drink tab at his casino/lounge bar pool club area.
That sounds like a wonderful spot.
Which is basically like winning, $300 at the blackjack table. I mean, it's because it's ridiculous, Vegas.
Spicy's generous.
Yeah. So,
how tall would you say the Spice Rack is?
Spicy is, I would say 6'5", maybe 6'6".
He's a tall,
tall
man.
Drink of water.
Yeah.
But very nice man. But, you know, I'm aging, getting older, and you know, staying out very late Friday night and then not sleeping Saturday and then staying spicy Saturday rolled around. And
oh.
It was hardcore because we went to the pool at this place. I don't know if I should say the casino. So I'm not mm-hmm. saying it on purpose. Where Russell Wilson and Ciara were sighted at a bungalow next to us, which was interesting.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You were in a bungalow too?
No, I wasn't. We were at the bar area, but it was right next to us.
Was he Instagramming the whole time?
He, you know, he looked uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He looked uncomfortable. He's not a comfortable guy. Like, he seems uncomfortable in his skin.
Yeah,
Russell
I can
Wilson.
See that.
But
wait, you're saying a guy who sent out an Instagram video right after he asked his wife to marry him, and then ended that with "yeah" is awkward? Nah,
a little bit. A little bit.
Gonna
awkward.
Marry me? Yeah.
But then Ciara performed some songs. It was just like very surreal, and I, you know.
What
and
a
then,
weekend.
And then we went back to Spicy's hut and had some more free drinks.
Spicy's hut.
And finally found, and this was the best part of the night because the whole thing now with the kids today in Vegas, it's all about the EDM. It's all about the EDM. And it's like.
Kids today in Vegas.
Well, what was it like when you went there?
What?
What was it like when you
hip-hop.
Were a kid
there was
then?
More hip-hop. There was club music, but then there was a nice mix. And finally, Saturday night, I said to Spicy, is there anywhere that plays kind of like hip-hop music in a bar or a club? And he took me to an underground bar within the grounds of his hotel.
Wow.
That was a hip-hop bar. And
so
that
many
was fun.
Layers.
But this stage, Greg, is over for me in Vegas. I don't know.
Yeah, you're getting up there.
Yeah, it's time to pivot. If there is a future for the old Zeuser in Vegas, it won't be the way this weekend went. But the Spice Rack delivered in a big way. Just like it salvaged your weekend, Wes. Not that I needed the weekend salvage, but it was the high point, Spicy Saturday.
I'm noticing a trend, too. You know, as you're getting getting up there in years, Dan.
Younger than you, by the way.
You came back. That's true, by a year. You came back from the Dominican Republic. Got sick after that. Came back from Vegas, you know, the old party lifestyle. It's tough. Mm.
I was sick before Dominican, but it's
exactly.
beside the point. Yeah, I think I got sick from being old in Vegas.
Well, I hope you're feeling better soon.
Thank you, Colleen. Yeah. Today's podcast, see, can't even talk. It's over. Today's podcast, solid one. I'm going to give it a pre-grade of B.
Wow.
First ever pre-grade.
Pre-grade of B.
Goodness, all right.
Ground here.
A lot of news to get to. The NFL annual meeting is wrapped up. Mark Sessler, Colleen, of course, is sitting in the Sizzler chair today. He is at an airport right now getting ready to fly back to California. I'm sure he's not thrilled about it because he's been loving life in Boca Raton.
I could
it's
see
very
that.
Obvious. He's been cranking out articles, talking to coaches and GMs, making friends, hitting up the mini bar, getting some time by himself. That's the Sizzler lifestyle, and it's all about to end. It's going to come to a crashing thud in, 7 hours or so.
Well, hopefully we can get him on the show. We're not sure because he's going through security now. He's waiting in line, so we'll
Why, see. Is he like a security risk where they're going to pull him aside? And
I would think he'll have time to get through security, find a quiet place, and we can call him maybe at the end of the show. But you never know with these things.
I hope so. He'll be in high spirits.
He will be. He's going to be flying. So we'll talk about what's going on in the news. We will also, because there are some new rule changes that are now officially going to effect in the 2016 season, some of them seem solid, some seem like maybe they are problematic. But the crew here, the four of us, have our own rule changes that if we had the power, it would go straight through legislation and become rules in 2016. So we'll share what our rule changes would be. Unfortunately, no one listens to us.
One day.
Well, our listeners listen to us. They count.
They count, but they can't make a difference when it comes to changing.
Well, that can be true, but with a little momentum and a little time, you never know. I mean, the upright field goal movement was something Adam Carolla really spearheaded, but I consider myself as someone who is a champion for that for years. And eventually they extended the goalpost.
And
so maybe we could do it.
Wait a second. Are you sneaky tying yourself to that rule change?
Yeah.
You think you made a difference?
I don't really think I made a difference. But it was something I championed for years before that. Say on Twitter, I talked to the people. I even asked a question about it.
We're happy
press
for
conference.
You.
It's good. It was big.
And we will. All right. So good. We're going to maybe that will a similar thing will go down with at least one of these rule changes that we have.
I hope so. Or change.org. There's always that, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm always signing petitions.
How come nothing ever comes of that?
I know.
Let's check behind the glass with the Irishman. How you doing, Brandon?
It sounds like better than you.
Yeah. Well, I'm fighting through it. I'm fine.
I have to say, though, would you have liked to go to a club that was playing some 8 o'clock delight more so than that other music?
Well, let's hear it. Kind of sounds like Wes's teenage years at the disco.
I think
you're in your sunglasses.
By the time I was drinking age,
less roller skating.
The disco movement had a slight comeback in the early to mid '90s.
Well, with like Delight and artists.
It was like
that.
Have a Nice Day Cafe and all that stuff.
Yeah.
What?
There was a bar. I think it was called Have a Nice Day Cafe, where it was like a disco motif in the '90s.
Ace of Base.
I hated Ace of Base.
Love
kind of disco-y.
Oh my god!
They have
I,
that,
if
they
I
have
never
that
hear the
apparently
sign again,
had secret neo-Nazi leanings. That's
was
been
that all that she wants for
really?
Their baby?
That came out literally.
Oh, what a terrible song!
That kind of sounds like one of those '90s rumors.
No, it was very recent.
Really?
I read a story on it. That supposedly they were a Nazi band.
Oh, we'll have to read into that. Maybe that'll be
shocking.
An item for tomorrow's podcast. Let's start with the news. Yeah, that's down the road. The fascist podcast coming up. Sean Payton, let's start with him. Not a fascist. I don't think so. He has agreed to a 5-year contract with the Saints. Payton himself announced that he'd agreed to that 5-year extension, which will take him through the 2020 season. He has not yet signed the deal, but he has been the coach in New Orleans since 2006, currently the third longest tenured NFL coach. Saints are 87-57 in Peyton's time there, a Super Bowl, of course, which Greg remembers fondly. However,
7 years ago now.
However, Mr. Rosenthal, this has been a mediocre to poor team for several years now, and now you give them 5 years. Why?
I feel like they are doing things the wrong way, that they go back-to-back 7-9 seasons, and they are doubling down on Sean Payton and Drew Brees and doubling down on money. And I'm not really sure why. What is the leverage that Sean Payton had here? He made it sound like the entire season, or at least sources close to Sean Payton made it sound like the whole season, he's going to take the best, you know, he's going to take another job. He's going to end up going to San Diego, or he's going to go somewhere else, Indianapolis. Hey, guess what? No one else in the NFL particularly wanted him. His contract wasn't even running out this year. He had another year left, I think through 2017, and suddenly he gets a five-year extension. He's hustling. His agent's doing a good job, but I don't get it.
The other part of this, too, is that they said that he was carrying around the extension in his briefcase, and he's ready to sign it. One,
very important papers.
He has a briefcase. And
still
two,
rolling with the briefcase.
He's just carrying it around, telling people that he has it on him, but he hasn't signed it yet. So he's just like, oh, here it is, right here in my old briefcase.
Doesn't that always end poorly, though, when you have a contract, whether it's like a TV show or a movie? It's like, I'm going to sign this contract. It's just a matter of time before I sign it. And then something terrible happens and you never sign the contract.
Foreboding.
Isn't this just an example of there's a leadership vacuum with this organization? So they're just going to keep pushing things along? I mean, who's there to make decisions on Sean Payton's future?
Well,
Sean Payton's basically running the team, isn't he?
It seems that way. It seems like the two of them, him and Brees, have so much power together and apart.
Brees gets people traded.
Well, the ownership situation.
He would never say that, though. Oh, Jimmy Graham, I could have never.
Kenny Stills is my best.
What? My word. How could they be leaving the organization?
I wish you weren't a liar.
Oh, I got the vapors.
You mean you've got Mickey Loomis, who's essentially on one side of the business side, really, and he's helping to run the Hornets. You've got a
Pelicans
ownership. Yeah, that's right, the Pelicans.
Pelos.
And you've got the Tom Benson situation, which is, you know, they're battling.
That's, you know, Southern noir.
Legal battles against members of their own family that are trying to wrest the company away. You've got his wife, who I would guess is, you know, very active in terms of making these decisions at this point, who doesn't have a lot of experience with it. And you're right. And I think it's kind of like, it's like Tom Coughlin was doing better relatively in New York than Sean Payton's been doing in New Orleans recently.
This is a talent poor
roster. And has won a Super Bowl more recently.
Who outside of Drew Brees and Cam Jordan would you consider like an above average starter on this roster?
No, that's a great question.
That's hard. Yeah.
It's a talent poor roster.
Right. I actually think he does a good job. He's a good coach. I think he's coming into part of his career where he reminds me a little bit of Mike Shanahan, where he's a great play caller. He maximizes the offensive talent that he has, but he has too much power in that he's running a whole organization.
And here's the thing, too, with the Saints is that, you know, when I wrote those pain rankings last year, if they never would have won that Super Bowl, they would have been on the pain rankings. This was a famously poor organization when it came to success. So the fact that they won that title, I mean, it's organization to organization, things are different. With the Giants, they had multiple titles in their past. But when the Saints won a title, maybe he has something close in NFL terms to a lifetime pass with that franchise, because that title meant that much to the organization. It's the same ownership.
Plus, the defense was one of the biggest issues for them last year. So, I mean, part of that, yes, is on him, but they also need to turn that around.
I think it's on him more than anyone, because he's been running that team for 10 years and they've never been able to solve that. We've talked about this before. They did have a prolonged period of success. I mean, so you do have to give it that they're dropping 13 wins, 11 wins, 13 wins. But 3 out of 4 years, they've won 7 games. So they actually have as many 7-9 seasons, Wes, since 2012 as the St. Louis Rams.
Wow.
Right, but they're not trying to go 7-9 on purpose. Right. Like, not Rams.
That's right. Well, the St. Louis Rams, yeah, were the ones that got the 7-9. L.A. Rams are going to be going to the Super Bowl.
I don't think the Saints' goal is 7-9 like the Rams' goal.
We'll get back to the Rams in a second. However, let's first talk about what's going on in KC. Some bad news surrounding Justin Houston, their gifted pass rusher. Had surgery on his knee in February to repair his ACL. And their team's chief trainer, Rick Buchholder, said that it was not a torn ACL, so it's not your customary, torn ACL, big-time surgery. But it is significant in the sense that it should sideline Houston 6 to 12 months. And if you do the math on 6 to 12 months, that means on the best-case scenario, he could be back by the start of the season but could miss a couple weeks. Worst-case scenario, he can miss the whole year.
this is a new category of injury for me as far as following the NFL, because you can have your ACL torn, you can have your ACL frayed. In this case, you have your ACL just simply not functioning, is what they're saying.
Doesn't sound good. You want it to function.
No.
They're not saying it's torn or frayed. It's just not functioning.
It was worse.
I know. Yeah.
Dr. James Andrews, I feel like he...
I'm not familiar with him.
I've never heard of him before. Yeah. This guy must be new on the scene. No, but this was, I guess, one of the reasons why they kind of rushed to re-sign Tamba Ali, because just as like an insurance policy, because he had his own knee issues too last year, and he's sort of winding down, but that would be a huge blow for them.
It made such a difference when he was not in the lineup for them, and I thought they've had a really nice offseason keeping their defense intact for relatively little money, and now you lose the best player by far on your defense and really the best player on your team because Jamaal Charles hasn't been healthy. And I think it is more worrisome almost than a torn ACL because it's unknown. I mean, if you listen to the ESPN reports on it, I think there's serious questions of that he could miss a good chunk of the season, that he or the whole thing even. Who knows?
I think he's been the best edge rusher in the NFL for the past 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. I mean,
on balance, yeah.
He's been better than Von Miller.
And he gets paid like it too. I mean, he, other than J.J. Watt, I believe he's basically the second highest paid defensive player in football. So, again, you know, we don't talk about Justin Houston a ton, but it's a brutal blow for this team.
You're not allowed.
But where are we talking about
it? I got a memo that you can – if you want to talk about franchise tags, you can only mention Dez Bryant. It's all you can show on TV. You can't write about Justin Houston. It always has to be Dez every time.
Wes working out demons from a year ago's news cycle.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Justin Houston doesn't even
reminder.
Exist.
It's got to do
it. But if Dez sneezes or yells at somebody in the locker room, lead story.
You know, you're jinxing it because I think – I haven't heard about Dez in a few months, and if we say his name, it
oh, he'll be
pop up.
He'll be leading the newscast soon.
Newscast, I like
ooh,
that.
Newscast,
very official. big news, guys! Hard Knocks season 11. We know the team, and if there would be a favorite, if there was a way to handicap such things, the Rams would have been up there because of the Los Angeles move. And guess what? It is the Los Angeles Rams. They will be the Hard Knocks team. The series will air beginning August 9th. The LA Times had the first report on this. And, Greg, you wrote a things that you're excited about piece on the NFL.com site. So why don't you get into it a little bit? What are you excited about the upcoming season of Hard Knocks?
Well, first of all, you know, people on Twitter are wondering, why am I stepping in on your territory? Well, you know, Dan was out sick, and we knew this news was coming.
The timing, what painful timing.
In the morning, and hey, someone's got to step up to the plate. I can't fill Dan's shoes, but I've been a Hard Knocks fan since it started. I love this show, and I think this will be great because – look, their training camp's going to be in Irvine down in Orange County, but they do a lot of, especially that first episode of the summer before training camp even starts. And I just think a team moving cities is something we've certainly never seen on Hard Knocks and adds a totally different element. They're very good at capturing the family aspect and that NFL life is a transitory, transitional existence, and what could be more like that than the entire organization has to get up, move over to the West Coast? So I just think that'll add some interesting scenes to the year.
I'm actually happy that you got to write it, Greg, because you are – I love the show, and everybody knows that because I talk about it all the time, but you are a huge fan, as you said. So, I mean, the one thing I will say, if you want to say a criticism about Hard Knocks, is that it's been around long enough now where there's a formula to it, and there's – different beats that it seems every season kind of hits. So that's why, yeah, adding something new has to send it down a different road. So it'll be interesting seeing how they cover that move and the transition and the inevitable Snoop Dogg sighting.
Oh, yeah.
They'll show up in this at some point.
I really hope we get to see the moving trucks and things like that, because I feel like whenever I think about teams moving, it's like under the cover of darkness. I see the big Mayflower truck with the Colts when they left. And I just think that with the Rams, the thing that I like about it the most is I don't have really high expectations for this. I'm not really expecting a lot. And I think that that's what's going to make it really good, because without fail every year. Hard Knocks makes training camp exciting. And training camp, for everybody who's attended or covered it, it's like the worst.
Well, why wouldn't you have high expectations? Hard Knocks is always delivers.
No, that's what I mean. But you think about the
Texans
team
I wasn't excited
see.
For either, and it was a good one, yeah.
Exactly. And you're like, oh, wow, look at this. Bill O'Brien, he has such a personality. He's cursing all over the place, and it's great.
Yeah.
But I think that the Rams, it's going to get me excited about the Rams.
They're not
and
even,
I need something to be excited about the Rams.
Not even just St. Louis to L.A. They're going to have mini camps and off-season practices in Oxnard, north of Los Angeles, where the Cowboys work out. Then training camps south of Los Angeles in UC Irvine.
Oh, wow.
And then during the season in Thousand Oaks. Those are the plans. It's not set in stone, but they're going to be moving all over the place.
Wow. And that's one of the things that surprised me the most about L.A. when I moved here, because it's huge. It's sprawling.
Yes.
It's not walkable. Nothing is close. And there's so much traffic. So that would be interesting to see the logistics of it all. What's going on over there?
Well, we're getting the update.
They're laughing. They're writing notes back and forth.
No, you guys are
very
pros.
Distracting.
Over on this side, there's some production elements, Wes, going on. We were trying to figure out when Mark was available.
He's got to be available after Hard Knocks. You know.
But you know Greg has the Charlie scratch when he writes.
Oh, yeah.
So he wrote on my paper, tell me if you would understand what this meant, next to on our notes, like when we would talk to Mark. Do it now after.
I said, do it now after
no,
Hard
wait,
Knocks.
And then I looked at you like, wait. I thought you were writing do it now, and I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then you wrote after. Well, so then I was like, wait, do you want me to circle one? Am I choosing?
Well,
so then you wrote Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
And then I was able to piece it
together. The boss not being very clear, setting you up maybe.
Surprised you didn't go with the symbols, just like a Nike sign.
An ad symbol.
There was a shadowy league figure that came up to me downstairs. This is going back to Hard Knocks.
Okay.
That said, oh, this is going to be a bad season. Who cares? What stars do they have? And then what I said to him was,
what?
This
Uh-oh.
Is the thing. This is kind of like a common refrain.
Is he a shadowy league figure?
Yeah, why not?
All right.
This is a common refrain that if there isn't like all these big stars, it'll be a bad season. The whole thing with Hard Knocks is it's all about the personalities. And what makes a season is, first of all, you do need a coach that's charismatic, but you can never assume whether one is or not, Bill O'Brien being a perfect example.
I think Fisher will be interesting.
I think he will as well. And also it comes down to the guys like Chris Polk last year, those type of guys.
Charles James.
Tyler Starr,
Falcons
season. Guys that you would never even think of or even know who they were, and they make the show. So don't get too caught up.
Greg Williams will be good, too.
Greg, I'm interested to see how heavily featured Greg Williams is because he's definitely the biggest personality think of. And he gets that defense playing in a certain way, but this is only 4 years removed from the NFL suspending him for an entire season for his methods of aggressive coaching. This is NFL Films taping it. Normally, I think they would love Greg Williams, eat it up, and I think they will ultimately, but that's a good watch.
Oh, really excited. Can't wait.
Case Keenum, too. I mean, Case Keenum's going to be a superstar.
It's always good to have a star quarterback whenever they're intriguing human beings. However, whenever there's a coaching staff, and we see this on Hard Knocks a lot, trying to talk itself into two crappy quarterbacks.
Oh, no.
We saw last summer, Wes. It's always fun.
That'll be the title of one of the Hard Knocks episodes, Making a Case for Case. A
lot of
nice.
I like it.
A lot of Les Snead hair shots.
Ooh.
Maybe get behind the scenes there.
Less is more.
I didn't mention it in the
– Oh, my God, you guys.
I didn't
– Just workshop headlines for the Hard Knocks recaps for the rest of today's show.
I didn't mention it in the post, but, you know, maybe the first couple of Hard Knocks this year will be Les Snead and former NFL Network anchor Kara Henderson-Snead.
I
mean,
right.
One of the hosts of Total Access for years.
Yes.
She's married to the general manager. That seems like fun.
Let's get her on the show. Let's
yeah,
check
can't
in.
Wait for that.
Greg, I think you're more excited about that.
Really oversold that one.
Just saying.
All right, now it's time to do it now after Hard Knocks. That's a segment we're calling. And to do that, we got to speak with Mark Sessler, who is at an airport. Which airport is it, Mark?
I'm at the Miami airport, and I've just been physically moved out of the way 2 seconds ago by two U.S. Customs agents. So this needs to be rather brief, but this is the closest airport I've ever seen to LAX in terms of chaos.
Why? You just texted, hey, can we do it now? So I thought we'd call you up right now.
Let's do it.
What is the scene, just, you know, since you're on the scene, those terrorist attacks of yesterday. Is it increased security at the airport?
I don't have a full read on that. I'm just through security. People, they're just lounging and reading books. I see a guy eating an apple, so I don't think
pretty
there's
stringent.
A lot of paranoia happening.
You said it was the worst cab ride ever on the way there.
It's going to be when the NFL finds out how much it costs, too. It's about $160. So.
Whoa!
Wow. Good luck getting that reimbursed.
Oh, it's going to get reimbursed. Let's not have any questions about that.
All right, so the last time we talked to you, Mark, it was before anything had really happened at the annual meeting, but now everything has happened. Everything, it's a different NFL than it was when we woke up 2 days ago. So let's get into some changes, and we'll start with some rules. First up, touchbacks now. You put one in the end zone. 25-yard line, not the 20-yard line. And what are you hearing about this, Mark? What was the buzz in and around the facility? Because it was somewhat controversial when it was announced.
Well, I think the only thing that I kept hearing, and I know that this is a rule that has Greg very fired up based on what I was listening Greg chat about earlier, but it seems as if some people feel like it would promote safety or not promote safety. That was some of the scuttlebutt. I don't think it was a rule that like brought the house down from where I was. It didn't get a lot of discussion, but I think it's kind of a game changer. And some of the one thing about this week's rules in general, they advertise them as nothing really big happened, but some of the proposals that went through I think are quite interesting, especially the double ejection or the ejection one for two personal fouls. That I know Ian said that was a week ago that was going to pass, and so that was the foundation of that. But it seemed honestly. There was people saying that would be issues to get that through. The people didn't agree with that, and that's a big change. I think that's an interesting rule change.
I think it's interesting, but I don't know how many times a year that'll happen.
No, it's not.
There was no call for it. There was no need for it.
Well, they basically are. They're always just reacting to a big story, and they're reacting to the Odell Beckham one. Whereas the touchbacks, you know, that's happening, whatever, more than five times every game. Well, more than that. And it seems curious to me because there's been articles about this already. Already, you know, kickers have gotten so good now. We're just going to see, I think, a lot of pop-up kicks that they try to, you know, jam it so it lands, you know, between the goal line and the 5-yard line.
That sounds really hard, by the way. Assumption that they'll be able to.
It does, but some teams already do. Some teams already do that.
Not
on a regular basis, but I think they'll do it more now.
Look, punters are really good at what they do, and they can't even put it between the 10-yard line and the goal line on a consistent basis.
I just think it's. I have a feeling it only lasts 1 year. It's a temporary reason, and the committee they are doing it expressly for player safety. They are doing it to reduce kickoffs. I never really understood why they just keep trying to reduce kickoffs over and over. If they hate it so much, just kill it.
Well, then you eliminate onside kicks, and that changes the outcome of exciting close games.
And you are also, Greg, not as much as a traditionalist, it seems, when it comes to sports in general, which isn't a shot, but like to me, if you take out all that stuff, I would feel like it wasn't the same game anymore.
I agree.
Yeah.
So I'd rather them search for ways to try to keep the kickoffs involved rather than get rid of it.
I think this will have a big impact. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think there's going to be a lot of those high pooch kick type of things. And because special teams coaches get fired based on the average starting position the other teams have in terms of field position. So they're going to try to do everything they can to get them inside the 25.
The PAT rule is now in the books for good. That came out of the meetings. So obviously they like that. The automatic ejection rule passed. If you get two unsportsmanlike conduct fouls in one game, you're out of the game automatically. Over, under, how many times that comes into play this season? I will set it at 1.5.
Yeah, not going to happen.
I'll go over, but only because I think it will be about 2 or 3.
Okay.
I'll go over.
There's also now penalty flags if you attempt to call timeout when you don't have one. Outcomes of
I like that one. You got to pay attention. You got to keep track of these things.
It's weird that
one.
It was bizarre that it wasn't a penalty before. Why, you know?
Yeah.
Coaches started just doing this.
That feels like an Andy Reid type thing. Just like keep calling for timeouts, and you don't have them anymore.
Mark, give me an in-depth breakdown of the IR boomerang adjustment.
This one is actually most interesting, especially for you guys.
Okay, Mark, give me an in-depth, nuanced, clear-eyed take on it.
Well, now it means, I mean, essentially that you can scan your whole roster of players that are on IR and kind of retroactively
assign the boomerang to someone when they're, you know, that they're going to be ready in time versus, you know, having to do it in August and you're just sort of hoping that their recovery hits on schedule, and that's not always the case. So I think it's just one of these rules that's sensible. IR return made sense to begin with, and they're kind of tweaking it to make it more flexible and give teams a little bit more of a, you know, a purview on what they want to do with those players.
A lot of buzz about the term IR boomerang in Boca.
Yeah, did you hear it at all?
I like how
Mark
said
buzz.
Assign the boomerang.
There was almost essentially outside of me, I think, including it in one tweet, zero buzz.
Never give up, buddy, because the Geno coaster, nobody thought that would catch on either. Colleen. I don't know how you thought this was fascinating. Let's hear why.
So I lit up about this one.
You really
because,
did.
Listen, though, coaches don't have to be forthright about the seriousness of the injuries. So for you guys, when you're writing all of these posts, there's going to be a lot of things that are vague, and you don't know if guys are going to be out for the season or not because coaches won't necessarily have to say that. They can mask things now.
Mm. So you're excited about that?
No, I think it adds a lot of questions.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
When you're wondering how
– She's saying exactly, and I think she's right. Patra was the first to grumble about this.
Shocking. Patra grumbles about everything.
Right, but he was right on this. He said, this is going to make our jobs annoying.
It's
going to
be a mess.
Right, and it's not very clear on what these IR players will be, what the deal is with them. So.
That is such a Patra. I can see it in Slack now. I missed the message, but he's like, this is bullshit. This sucks. Well, I don't understand why they make this. They're just going to make it harder for us.
It's on his whiteboard now.
His Love voice got Pat. Deeper, too.
He's got a very deep, masculine voice. No more chop blocks. Everything okay at the airport, Mark?
Yeah, there's various sounds that I'm sure annoying to the listener, but yeah.
Finally, Mark, before you go, you were at the coach's breakfast, and we can also talk a little about the coaching breakfast, but John Harbaugh told reporters that Trent Richardson, and this is one of my favorite subplots of the summer coming up, unofficially is back. This is the longest courtship for a scrub running back in the history of the National Football League.
Yeah, well, I think you should be a little concerned, Dan, because outside of the fact that the subtext was he's not in shape and we need to get him in shape,
yeah,
you know, that's a total wild card. Man, they sound committed to this guy. He's going to get at least one carry, one snap, and then you're going to owe me two sandwiches. And it's the Baltimore Ravens of all teams that helps me win this long-lasting wager. You're going down.
It certainly would be ironic if the Ravens helped you out. But I don't know. It just seems like they almost have like a comically large prop carrot that they're dangling just to keep him fit through the spring and into the summer to maybe get to training camp. Maybe sign a contract and then maybe make it past a couple of rounds of cuts. I still feel good is what I'm
Here's
saying.
Here's why Dan should be a little concerned. The Ravens have a history, because of their general manager, of helping Alabama players back into the league.
Oh,
Rolando McClain, they took a flyer on him twice because Ozzie Newsome has that Alabama connection.
And John Harbaugh also said, hopefully no one will come in and swoop him away from us.
Oh, yeah, I'm
so
sure.
Can I
offer a counter
there.
Also?
Sure.
You know, they like to help out Alabama players who can play football.
That's a fair point.
I'm okay. You know, no offense, T. Rich, former first round pick. All right,
yeah,
Mark. Anything else?
Development, please.
Who was your favorite people at the two coaches breakfast? If people aren't, familiar, that's a whole hour's worth of you know, time you have with any coach you want. Back to back days. You have the AFC one day, the NFC the next.
I felt like what happened both days was that the people that you think that you'd want to sit down next to and would be the most interesting were, because Arians was an absolute star this morning. He showed up 20 minutes early. A lot of these coaches, you know, they're hungover. They don't want to even do this thing. They roll in, you know, with their PR person pulling them by the neck. But Arians rolled in 20 minutes early, sat right down with a huge plate of food and just started talking to people at the table. And I had picked him first. He was great, very informative. I thought Mike Tomlin was fascinating from the AFC side. You know, he's not always, I don't think, loved these breakfasts, but he seemed to really be into it this time, and he was just shooting from the hip. And so, you know, it was excellent access. After a week that is really tough for access, it's really, you feel like you're bothering these guys to ask them the one question while they're on vacation with their wife and kids. It's an awful feeling. As
I love
reporter,
that Mark's hung up on that.
What?
You bring up the wife and kids aspect more than any journo in the biz.
I'll tell you, it's definitely you feel intrusive, and it's not a great feeling.
It's part of their job,
the
though.
Are great.
What another question, or maybe if anybody else has one, shoot. But were you by any chance? Was it one of your recorders that Bill Belichick pushed away like a thug during his breakfast availability?
No, I didn't get close to Belichick. I think I was sort of watching from afar, and it was actually I think one of the larger. Someone tried to stick one of those big television microphones.
It wasn't
bad. Ones.
No, it wasn't right in his face. Come on.
Well,
Greg,
no,
how do you answer to that, Greg?
I don't even know what you're talking about. I think he was annoyed by the fact that he was just swarmed by human beings. He didn't want to be there, and I thought it was funny what he did.
Mark,
class act.
Did you eat breakfast? I know you're not big on food.
Oh, man, you can't eat. They call it a breakfast, but all you do is you grab – a scrap of food after you've done your work. You can't eat it. Anyone, maybe a beat writer who wants to sit with the same coach for an hour can sit down with like a big plate of eggs and whatever else they're serving. But you're going from table to table. The last thing that you want to do strategically is sit down and start like plowing through like a 40-minute breakfast. I mean, otherwise, why send that person there?
Well, Mark also doesn't like food, so that's a factor.
That's accurate.
Mark, was it your idea to do the post on 10 different head coaches you asked what they would be doing if they weren't football coaches? I thought that was a very interesting read.
Well, thank you. I just came up with it kind of on the way because with the NFC breakfast so late in the week, there just wasn't a lot of hot take breaking news to come, it didn't seem like. And so it was an easy way to kind of ask one question of even some of the less interesting coaches and then move on. And I didn't know if it would come together or not. And I think these are interesting guys, but I thought most of them said they wanted to be like construction workers or like do these. It's like they're big, huge dudes. You forget that these, like Doug Peterson is just giant. They're just giant people. And it makes sense. If they weren't a coach, they'd be, like cutting down trees or like breaking down walls.
That makes a little sense too. Like if they would go something they think they'd be good at, but also not a ton of like responsibility beyond themselves and maybe their family. It's probably stressful being a head coach. It makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, they're paid well enough to, deal with the stress until they get canned. But most of them seem happy in March. We'll find out where they are in September.
All right. Check out that piece that Mark Sessler wrote. A lot of pieces that Mark Sessler wrote. Yeoman's work, and now he has to come back to us. So sorry about that, Mark. But good job.
Can't wait.
In Boca Raton, and we'll see you on the other side.
All right. I love you guys. Bye.
Love you too,
buddy.
Love
you.
Let's move on. Tyrod Taylor. His agent is wondering why the Buffalo Bills are not reaching out and being aggressive in talks. I mean, the Bills have had bad quarterback play for years, but guess what? They seem to be more than willing to let Taylor play out the final year of his deal. Here is what the agent said, Adisa Bakari. It's the Bills' prerogative to do what they want to do as it relates to Tyrod Taylor or any other Bills player. Fortunately, there are 31 other teams that have watched and will be watching Tyrod. Wes, I don't blame the Bills, right? I mean, he had a nice season, but he got beat up a little bit. It wasn't like he blew the doors off the league. Why not wait it out?
There's a lot to unpack here. I think one of the things that stands out, the Bills have placed a higher priority on extending Stephon Gilmore, a cornerback, than Tyrod Taylor. And like you said, you've got a 6'1", slightly built, scrambling quarterback with a high sack rate. He's an injury risk. He lost time to an MCL sprain last year. And during that time, one source on the Bills told Rap Sheet, E.J. Manuel has a chance to make this a quarterback battle.
Oh, my God.
And we're talking about E.J. Manuel. Hmm. So to me, that's really reflective of what they think of Tyrod Taylor right now. I know they want him. One big question they have about him is he never uses the middle of the field. He's a scrambling quarterback who goes down the field and to the sidelines, but the whole area in the middle of the field, a lot of times where Sammy Watkins is running slants and crossing routes, Tyrod Taylor doesn't see him.
That's like the opposite of what you find most quarterbacks' weaknesses are. Usually a limited quarterback like a Mark Sanchez, for instance, he's great going up the seams, not so much to the outside. I love Tyrod Taylor, but he's in a bad spot here. He is under contract for $1 million this year. It is, you do have to question like the fairness of it, and maybe they can come up with some sort of solution where he gets a bump this year and they don't really think about a long-term extension, or they come up with something where it's got an option and then his salary goes way up? Because it's a little crazy to be a 16-game starter type of guy and get paid $1 million at this point when you're a veteran. I mean, you could understand why he'd be upset, and yet he doesn't really have anything he can do. He's not gonna hold out.
Yeah, and Doug Whaley, I mean, he's been pretty open about the fact that they're keeping it a possibility that they would maybe draft a quarterback if that came about, if they liked the options that were there. But, I mean, you see that he's not tied to him at all.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, I understand if you're the agent, you're trying to get your guy paid, you're trying to get paid yourself. But if Tyrod Taylor is as good as the agent seems to think he is, he has another big year this year, he's going to get all the money in the world next year, whether it's from the Bills or another team with a franchise tag.
So, well, it's easy for us to say that he's ultimately doing a job that he didn't get hired for. He got hired to essentially be a number two or three quarterback.
So what are you going to do, hold out because you had one decent year?
No, but you push as hard as you can to get more money this year.
I know some other people were hired to do jobs they're not paid for.
And yet we're coming down on that he shouldn't do it.
There it is, folks. We should get like a –
Right. My whole point was trying to set that up, but no one seemed to go over everyone's head.
No, I got it.
Yeah. Bing, 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 yeah.
Yeah, like a dinger for Wes' salary gripe. It's good. In other news, Aaron Rodgers was on – Pete Holmes is one of my favorite comedians in the world. Do you know his material at all?
Yeah, not so much as a stand-up, but I do remember he had his late-night show, and I've listened to his podcast once or twice.
Yes, Pete Holmes has a podcast called You Made It Weird, where he has a lot of in-depth interviews with celebrities and every once in a while an athlete, professional athlete. Aaron Rodgers was on the show that came out this week, a two-hour sit-down with Rodgers.
Wow.
And within the first 10 minutes of their conversation, Aaron Rodgers – dipped into a deep dive. I wish this was a perfect Sessler story. I wish he was here for this. But a deep dive on a UFO sighting in New Jersey in 2005. He likened it to Independence Day with the flying saucer or the spaceship coming in like a ball of fire almost through the clouds, moving left to right, a large orange object, and then fighter jets scrambling.
Whoa.
And this is an exact quote. And, Brandon, I'm sorry, but I'm just reading a quote, buddy. And then it goes out of sight, and we look at each other and go, what in the f*** is that? Now, I want everyone to know he was on a comedian's podcast. However, he said it with a totally straight tone, and this is something he believes happened. Are you guys believers, is my question, in UFOs? Wes, we'll start with you.
I have actually sent Greg a long text about something similar to this before. UFO is a broad term, unidentified flying object. If I was convinced I saw an alien spacecraft from another planet, I think my world would tip over and I couldn't hang on. Football wouldn't mean anything to me.
Wow.
I'd probably end up being a homeless person. I don't think I could I would question everything. Like, football would not be meaningful to me at all.
It would be a real trip to find out for sure. I know exactly what you're saying. All of a sudden, things wouldn't be so important. But the answer, Wes, is no, you're saying. Oh, just because you can't imagine a world where it's yes?
No, I can imagine it. I tend to be – I'm a skeptical person by nature, and I don't really think that people are that smart. So I tend to believe that most UFO sightings are bogus.
So, I have a story.
Colleen's got a story.
All right. My dad saw a UFO.
Old man
and
Wolf.
And he swears by it. He was in the Air Force at the time. He was in the middle of nowhere in South Dakota, and he's an air traffic controller. So they know the airspace, and this was during Vietnam. And he has the radar in front of him, and he said it was him and one other guy in the tower, and they both saw it. And he said it was like a bright light, and it moved from one spot to the next, and then it was gone. And he said they both looked at each other, and my dad was like, did you just see that? And the other guy was like, I saw nothing. Because obviously they would go to Vietnam if they reported anything. He swears to this day it was a UFO. How about
the,
that?
The logic being if they reported it to their superior, they would be disciplined for being jackals?
Yeah, they would be sent
to Nam.
To Nam. Mm-hmm.
That's heavy.
So, yeah, I believe because he tells the story so convincingly, and I don't think it's a story. I think it's real. I think it happened.
Greg?
No, I don't believe in any of this stuff.
That's the most predictable answer of this segment, by the way.
Well, of course.
Who cares?
It's not who cares. There's a lot of – people believe a lot of things. And there's usually,
like chupacabras.
Like there's a million things that people try to come up with explanations where there is no explanation that just because you can't come up with an explanation, you come up with, you know, UFOs. One of the things I think that is probably the most curious about UFO things is like they're all very similar. A lot of it is very similar types of stories, which are the same stories that we've seen on TV, like bright lights and a
right.
flash and things like that.
It's like leading the witness.
And if I tend to think if there was anything like this happening out there, it would be in a realm that wouldn't be so easily understood and copied by
every
person.
Agree. Also, you put the normal in paranormal.
Yeah.
I think that there are certainly thousands of people that claim to have seen
don't feel bad about saying that my dad's
are
a liar,
phony.
Dan.
No.
I'm not saying he's a
no,
liar.
Let me finish.
Maybe he's right, but you're asking me to come down one side or the other.
And by the way, Wes still hasn't answered. I think, so we're getting back to you, Chris. I think it's naive to think that we are the only like high-level species in the universe. So I think, yes, there's something out there. And I think when I was a kid, me and my cousins thought we would see UFOs every other month, but that was because you wanted to see it.
It was like really a lightning bug or something.
All right, Wes, a believer, yes or no, is there life beyond this realm?
I think you're right that it's foolish to think that we're the only intelligent beings out there. And my thing is, why would they be in a spacecraft just because human minds thought up this thing?
Right. Exactly.
Why couldn't they be traveling in their own beings? Right. I mean, spacecrafts are a human construction.
Wes, answer the question.
What is the question?
You believe in intelligent life beyond?
Yes.
Mankind?
We often text
yes.
pictures of this to this.
Yes, I do.
This appears on text chains a lot.
Yeah.
Aliens.
And you, Colleen, you're perfect to stand in. That's true. For Sessler, because we know what his answer would be.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So 75% of the Around 80. The NFL podcast.
Wow.
80 with.
I think
Colleen.
Anything is possible, but you're talking very specific sort of UFO sightings.
With that. Oh, Brandon, where do you stand?
Oh, I'm solely on Team Colleen, Team Dan.
Look at that.
Yeah, they're out there.
I think it has
they're
to do.
They're out there.
They are.
I want to believe.
They're listening right now.
I think it.
Shoot.
They are right. listeners of the pod.
Is there a connect?
That would be cool.
Best listeners.
If there's any advertisers in the universe, if there's like a Dick's Sporting Goods on Planet Zoltan, please. Reach out to our advertising department.
Zag Sporting Goods.
Other planets, like the aliens planets, always use letters we don't. A lot of X's and
Big
Z's.
Big Z guys. Big Z guys.
Also,
they're really
too.
Into that. This is good. I think this could be its own podcast. It could be on the theology podcast, because I think there's a connection here between my lack of belief in, you know, anything.
No, well, you're a nihilist.
I'm not a nihilist, but I wasn't raised with any religion, so that gives you a different vantage. You're not going to kind of think things are possible.
This is a good topic, Dan. Well chosen.
Yeah, we are off the rails.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
8 o'clock delight. Roger Goodell said at the annual meeting that the Patriots, despite that beautiful handwritten letter from Robert Kraft, they are not getting their first-round pick back, Greg.
Well, they can't get the respect back either from a lot of fans of how they've handled this situation.
Nice working with you, Greg. Ben McAdoo, we're going to welcome Tom Coughlin into the facility. This, to me, is one of the silliest stories in some time. Tommy boy, come back to us. Ben McAdoo's a young man trying to establish himself as the coach of the New York Giants. Stay out of the facility, even for a couple of years. There's plenty of great gyms in the suburbs of Jersey, I'm sure, Wes.
We're going to fire you, but you're welcome to come. Take a hike. If I was Coughlin, I'd tell him to take a hike.
I love it. He's just making it awkward.
I know.
Trent Baalke says there's no one calling for Colin Kaepernick. There's no trade even close to happening. Greg, what's going to happen?
Nothing. Stays with the 49ers.
The hatred is real. He's gone.
The Bears signed Josh Hill to an offer sheet. Who's getting excited?
Probably Mark Sessler, because his Making the Leap article might finally mean something.
Jay Cutler, maybe?
Ryan Tannehill. How much time we got, Brandon?
Money.
He doesn't know. He just threw his hands up.
What's that supposed to mean?
It's a lot.
Tons.
That's but when you put two arms up like a field goal is good, what does that mean?
Well, it's good. I mean, you got time. Oh, the other day.
Oh. Wait, what? Put the chisels down. What was that? Brandon.
I won't lie to you. I have no idea. I exported it over, and it looked like it had tons of room.
Huh. So you...
Sorry, Tannehill.
You fooled me into thinking that we had a ton of time.
I fooled myself.
Okay. Listen.
We've talked too much about Ryan Tannehill on this podcast anyway.
That's true.
I just want to say Ryan Tannehill.
Hey, let me guess. They're going to let him call plays more this year, and people believe in him.
Adam Gase has my back. Enough, man. How many boogeymen does Ryan Tannehill need? You
know. As many as Sam Bradford.
It must have been really bad with Joe Philbin if he's like, this new guy, now I feel comfortable.
Well, it seemed like they never got over. Well, A, they wouldn't let him call the play. They didn't have a lot of belief in him. And then B, they tried to draft Derek Carr. He wanted to draft Derek Carr, and they didn't do it. They should have just done it.
You know, Sam Bradford, though, unless I'm being naive, there hasn't been a ton of, like, pop about him throwing people under the bus and things of that nature. Tannehill, it seems like there's a lot of moves, a lot of behind the scenes,
a lot of
trying
excuses.
To
push, machinations.
Put machinations like this is his fault, this is his fault, this is his fault. Remember Mike Sherman?
You're saying he's more of a Machiavellian character than Sam Bradford.
Yeah, I think so. Sherman, Philbin. Now he's got who was the who's
Dick Quinn?
Quinn, and now maybe Gase is the next guy to fall. Whatever.
He's the new Cutler.
Ooh.
Wow.
Sherman was his guy.
Coach Killer. Ryan Tannehill, coach killer.
Sure, yeah. All right. Before we go, let's talk about it. We'll go cycle back now to the rule changes. Let's share some changes that we would enact that would make the NFL a better place in 2016 and beyond. The Wolf Woman, Connie Fox, we'll start with you.
All right. Death to excessive celebration penalties. I hate that rule. I know it really doesn't change the outcome of the game, but from an entertainment standpoint, I want that back in. That was one of my favorite things. I mean, when you think about all of the great celebrations, when you think about Chad Johnson picking up a pylon and putting the football, I mean, you think about Icky Shuffle, even that was a celebration of sorts. I mean, there's so many great things and there's so many creative guys in the league, and it really stinks that they can't celebrate.
Think about how silly this one particular rule that ties into what you're talking about is. You get a flag, and then the referee turns on his little mic and says, excessive celebration, 15-yard penalty for dropping to one knee for celebration that is not in celebration of your religion. Like, this is the type of stuff that we're talking about.
I know.
You let the person drop to a knee.
Come on. Loosen up, everybody.
And have group celebrations.
I'm with you.
Let
Good
Steve
rule.
Smith mock people with a rowboat dance. I mean, bring the electric slide.
T.O. is signing things. Throwing them up.
Bring it all back.
When Antonio Brown hugged the goalpost. They threw a flag on that.
What? That was brilliant.
It was awesome.
That was great.
All right, Wes. That's a good one, Colleen.
You know where I'm going with this.
Well, let's set this up a little bit. Wes, one of the more vocal figures on Twitter in the NFL sphere when it comes to being angry about the league's inability to not only just get the catch rule right, but to also do something about it. They're pretending like there's not a problem. So now Wes is not here to complain about what's going on. He's here to provide a solution.
Oh, I thought I could set it up with a bit of a background here.
Okay, go ahead.
How old were you in your backyard when your father taught you how to catch?
The old
maybe
man.
Maybe three, four.
The old man said you got to catch the football. If it hits your finger, Danny, that means you should have caught it.
Right. And if it stays in your hands and you possess the ball, you learn at a young age, that's what a catch is.
Yes.
Right. Well, the NFL has taught people that that's not what a catch is. Everything you know about catching an object, possessing it, it doesn't matter. You have to then turn and run. No, 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 no. Here's the rule. Catch the ball, possess it, don't juggle it, possess it, 2 feet down, you're a catch. That's a catch.
Because, like we were saying, there are plays where a guy will catch a ball, take 2 steps, get hit, have the ball on his person as he goes to the ground, then hit the turf, and it will pop out, and they're ruling it an incomplete pass, and it's missing the logic of literally what a catch is.
It's undermining the game. There are people learning this game. They want to grow the game in England and China. There are people learning the game in pubs where one guy is trying to bring the game to his friends, and they're like, well, they just caught the ball, and they called it not a catch.
What
about, I'm not going to watch this.
I don't even want to go down this rabbit hole, but you still there's a million exceptions. I mean, it does sound simple, but on one hand, I do sympathize a little bit with the NFL and the catch rule. And I think if they took it all back and made it that simple, I think there would be examples of that would be a problem. Well, first of all, you have to account for the diving catches.
There would be examples, but everyone would understand the rule.
And all this football move and this and that. I don't care about any of that. I just want to know what a catch is and isn't.
You will have more fumbles. That used to be their primary concern. Well, that's part of the game. Fumbles happen. They're worried now about player safety, that more defensive backs will be teeing off on a wide receiver to get him to drop the ball as soon as it hits his hands. To me, undermining the integrity of the game by not knowing what a catch is, not just fans, but players who devote their life to it, coaches devote their life to it, don't know what a catch is. It's silly to me.
All right. I will throw a scenario out there, and I'll set it up with a scenario. It's 4th and 13 around midfield.
Ooh, okay.
The team that's leading by 3 points is on defense. We're talking a big upset. They played such a great game.
Well, how much time is left?
There's 30 seconds left, 4th okay. and 13 from midfield. Okay, they bring a blitzer. The blitzer comes at the quarterback. Great job getting to the quarterback. Makes the quarterback rush to the throw. Incomplete pass. His arm swipes across, gently across the quarterback's face mask. Out comes the flag. 15-yard penalty. Instead of the game being over, 15-yard penalty. First down. The team, let's say it's the Patriots, is in field goal range. Game totally changed. And if you watch the replay, there was no real vicious hit to the head. It was incidental contact. If not, no contact at all, and the referee just missed it because it's so fast. I'm not usually a proponent of more replay, but I think this is a Rich Eisen, he's pushed this as well, for helmet-to-helmet hit contact, for striking a defenseless receiver or a quarterback, let's replay that and make sure
that we're reviewable.
Make it reviewable, make it challengeable, and make sure we're not game-changing plays in a game that's moving too fast. We don't have a chance to take a look at it because it's costing teams. Every year it happens on a week-by-week basis.
I can think of an example from a couple of years ago, 49ers Saints. I think it was Ahmad Brooks on Drew Brees late in the game.
Drives me nuts.
Does it have to be late in the game?
Well,
or is it at any time?
What if it's the Jets?
then throw it out. But nothing
ever good happens. What if it's Geno Smith as the Jets quarterback then?
Stop. I will not ride the Geno coaster.
So it's within 2 minutes, kind of an end of the game situation, or anytime?
I think it's just a challengeable play.
I agree. I agree with everyone's rules so far.
All right, so that puts more pressure on you to go.
Well, I got a couple.
All right, 5 for 5.
Let's start with the draft. I want a lottery. If you don't make the playoffs, you're not guaranteed to get the number one pick just because you had the worst record. Didn't become the biggest deal in the world, but what the Bucks did a couple years ago, shamelessly losing the game on purpose to get Jameis Winston, was a travesty. I also think it's an out.
What about the suck for luck campaign? Who could forget?
Ooh. Right.
They really did suck.
And here's the other thing. It's exciting. It just makes it more fun. They're always looking for ways to get more teams into it. You still have the best chance to have the ping pong balls come up. It's like the NBA if you had the worst record. But you're not guaranteed. And it just mixes it up a little bit more.
So are you going to tank like Sam Hinkie and the Sixers?
No, this is an anti-tanking thing.
They tank all the time in the NBA. I've seen the Knicks do it.
NBA is a little different structure than the NFL in a lot of ways. So I don't think tanking is a huge, huge problem, but I like the idea of a lottery anyways. They set up this system back in the 50s to even out as much as possible, but I think today's NFL is different. It's so evened out with salary cap and everything. You're the number five. Maybe you're in the 5 spot. Maybe you can move all the way up and get your guy.
I like that.
Think about how exciting – and this is why it will probably happen – the NFL Network live coverage of ping pong balls.
Oh, no.
Right, like the NFL doesn't want more of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a huge event. There's 5 teams that could have the number one
pick. And that Bucks thing sticks in my craw.
It does, me too, because I didn't think they needed a lottery until then. But if you look at what the Eagles were offering, according to some reports, 2 number one picks, a 3rd-round pick, their best offensive player and their best defensive player for the number one pick in the draft, and that's what the Bucks were holding on to because – of shenanigans in week 17, way more undermining the NFL than Deflategate.
Mm. Yep.
That still seems like too much. I don't believe that.
What?
What the Eagles were offering. But that's that's another story. Yeah.
4 for 4, Greg. You sure you want to give number 5? Because then you're messing with the
Is even 2. I haven't even decided either way. How about let's just go for the full Monty? Eliminate extra points. Let's just get rid of it.
Really?
Just got the 2-point conversion or nothing.
Here's what I'm going to say with that, Greg.
If that's too bold for everyone in the NFL, then I've got my compromise solution, which is just move extra points back another 10 yards. I would go for that. That has some of the intended effect.
So kickers are on the roster to get touchbacks and to kick field goals.
Kickers are people Greg.
It's up to teams how they want to use their roster. Kickers used to be quarterbacks when kicking. You know, if we're so worried about the tradition of football, you know, kickers wasn't even its own position back in the day.
Interesting subject. I'm on board.
All right.
You got me.
Two-point conversions are better. It's a football.
More
it's a more exciting
Think of
football.
The Russell Wilson, football the Luke play. Wilson play. Come on now.
I came around to the extra point being moved back a little bit. And if you move it back further, then the kicker's even a bigger part of the game. How about we get rid of the half measure and make the two-point conversion closer?
Oh.
Make a one-yard line?
Well, two-yard line. I think that's a good spot. That's about a 50.
And really dare spot. These coaches to pass up that percentage play. I don't know. But it's all right. I think that's a workshop one.
I'm all for it.
I'm in.
All right, Colleen, are you in on Greg's second?
No one's buying tickets to watch extra points.
It's drastic. It's a little – I don't know. I got to think about it.
You sold me on the fact that kickers weren't always kickers. They weren't always specialists. No. Who says they have to be specialists?
Right, you can use your roster however you want. Plus kickoffs are important.
Paul Hornung was a kicker.
Field goals are
Gino
still important.
Gino Cappelletti.
Hey, oh, Gino. Cappelletti.
Who isn't signing up for more two-point conversions?
I know. It's true. I could be convinced.
Well, Colleen, you've done it again. You've come on the show after a brief hiatus.
That's right.
And knocked it right out of the park.
Thanks. It's been great.
And we've all enjoyed your company, and we hope that you'll be back again soon.
I hope so, too. Thanks, Dan.
I give you an 8 out of 10 for today's show.
All right. Wow. That's fair.
What? All right. 8.5 out of 10.
I'll take it.
9.3.
There's lots of room to improve here, just like the pod.
Solid B.
I think Solid Pod went
some host
exceeded your
right
expectation.
Now between
Colin What's that was?
I think it exceeded the B expectation.
Maybe. The pre-grade was B, and I'm going to give it.
I think the UFO discussion put it way
That's
over
true.
There.
Mm. Plus the
Colleen's UFO story, I'm going to have to give you a 9.
Oh, yeah. Look at this. All
I
right.
I forgot about your
Let's
excellent.
Talk about it some more because I feel like I could get an A out of this.
Anything.
Eventually.
Any old man Wolf stories are going to bump you up a half.
That's right. Wes has met old man Wolf.
He is a delightful man.
All right. So that's it. We will be back with yet another show tomorrow. Thursday, so make sure you check it out. By the way, go on iTunes, give us the good old grade, and you know, a B, easy, give us a B, mm-hmm. B minus, and leave some comments.
That's right. We should be asking for some reviews. That really helps us out.
I love when you read them.
So please.
Some comments.
I like when he reads the bad ones.
Race.
Support us, and as we support you, loyal listeners, I don't know how we support you, but we do love you.
Free podcast.
This is Dan Hansis signing off for Connie Fox, the mailman, the boss, and the Irishman behind the glass. Pick up them chisels. Get back to work. Till Thursday.
Really looking forward to my big fat Greek wedding too coming out soon.
Didn't they have like a TV series that they tried to spin off the first movie and that failed? And now they're trying a sequel off the movie?
It's not a good way to do it.
It just like it didn't
it's like 20 years later.
And she starred in the TV show.
Oh no.
So it's like, wait a second.
Dan had a great 7-episode run. My big fat Greek life.
7 episodes? That even sounds like a lot.